Okay. Good morning, everyone. Hi, I'm Lauren Ritchie with ONC. I'm filling in for Mike Berry today. Want to thank you for joining the Public Health Data Systems Task Force. We have a few guest presenters with us today, so I'd like to welcome them and thank them for their time and presenting today. Just as a reminder, all task force meetings are open to the public. Your feedback is welcome either in the Zoom chat or during the formal public comment period, just scheduled for about 11:50 East Coast time today. So with that, we'll get started with roll call. Jillian Haney.
Good morning, present.
Aaron Malik.
Good morning.
Rachel Bolton.
Good morning.
Hans Budendijk.
Good morning.
Heather Cook Sinclair. Heather yet? Okay. Aaron Holt.
Good morning.
Charles Cross. Not yet. Stephen Eichner.
Good morning.
Good morning. Joe Gibson.
Good morning.
Raj Glabardi. Not yet. Jim Gerges.
I'm here.
John Kansky.
Good morning.
Bryant Karras.
Hello all.
All right, Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Good morning. Jennifer Layden. Les Leonard. Hung Lu.
Good morning.
Mark Marastica. Sorry if I mispronounced that. Mark, okay. Aaron Meary. Alex Muggy.
Good morning.
Stephen Murphy.
Good morning.
Eliel Olvera.
Good morning.
Jamie Pena.
Present. Good morning.
Abby Sears.
I'm here. Thank you.
Vivian Singletary.
Here. Good morning.
Phil Sutherland.
Good morning.
And Cheryl Turney.
Good morning.
And good morning, everyone. Is there anyone that I missed that joined while I was doing roll call? Okay. If not, I will turn it over to our co-chairs to get us started.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our fourth meeting. And today we're going to be reviewing the F criteria number 3, electronic laboratory reporting to public health agencies. I expect we'll have quite a robust discussion, but we will have presenters from experts in the field representing public health, APHL, and the Colorado Public Health Laboratory, as well as the private sector with LabCorp representatives. I'm very excited to hear from them. We have been in the field, public health has been in the field of electronic laboratory reporting for many, many years. I know in Massachusetts, we started our efforts to move from fax and paper back in the early 2000s. And it really took a while for ELR to get off the ground, but and then it you know really sped up over recent years as we received funding from CDC to support those efforts. Further, during the COVID pandemic, we saw a massive increase in the volume that we needed to manage and some centralization of some of those electronic feeds. And by the end of the pandemic, I believe that all public health, sanitary, local public health agencies could actually receive the standard HL7251 message. So there's significant progress that was made, although it took quite a bit of time. Unlike efforts within electronic case reporting, electronic laboratory reporting has been quite a bit federated within each jurisdiction. You know, we do have our representatives here from some of the one of the larger national laboratories, but within our states, we work very closely with our clinical laboratories in the hospitals, and most of those feeds would be going straight directly to local health departments. So I think that there are opportunities for us to discuss, you know, meaningful certification options to try to reduce variability and improve data quality. I think one of the things that we've heard quite a bit is that because laboratory reports are often the first notification that goes to the health department, missing, you know, full demographic information such as, you know, complete address information really stymies our ability to move forward quickly and act on that initial report. But that is, you know, in part because that information isn't collected in the laboratory information system. So there may be opportunities to look at potential certification, you know, within what information is sent from the on the test order into the LIMS and then directly to public health. So with that, I will turn it over to my co-chair, Arian, to introduce our panelists and walk us through discussions.
Thank you. This is a this is an exciting panel, both because, Jillian, as you note, this is an area that we've been able to do nationwide. So we've got great existence proofs for the utility and feasibility of ELR. And then we've also got, I think, a tremendous amount of lessons learned on the ground, particularly not so much related to the test itself, but as you know, the demographics and surrounding information around the test, as well as responding to rapid changes in diagnostic methodology. So let's go on to the panel overview. All right, so we have a pretty impressive panel. We really wanted to make sure that we had representation from public health. We've got representation from the public health labs, as well as APHL. And then really pleased to be able to get a representation from one of the large national labs themselves. We're also gonna be soliciting in the panel discussion feedback from hospital and health system members on the experience on the SEND side, or at least the portion of the SEND side. This is a complex area, as everybody knows, because lab data takes multiple hops prior to getting to public health. So with that, I am going to turn it over to David to give us the perspective from the public health side of this equation. David, over to you. David, are you on mute? Do we have David? All right. Why don't we go on to our next panel?
Hello.
Oh, hey, David. There you are. Perfect. Awesome. Go for it.
Okay. Can you hear me good now? Something was wrong with my phone, apparently.
No problem. We got you.
Okay. That's good. So you've got my slides. Okay, perfect. So just talk a little bit about from the New York State side as far as how we process what's going on with our intake of the data and some of the things that from my perspective I see as possible improvements. A lot of the issues that we have with inbound data from the labs mainly go along with standardization issues. We do have issues where even though the current national standard for HL7 is 251, we are still receiving from many hospitals and smaller commercial labs and the like, older versions of HL7, and we're also receiving flat files, our New York standard flat file that we have had for 20-something years, and along with various types of CSV files that have been developed due to COVID over the past 2 years. With HL7, I'll start with that, especially with the national standard, the 251. Even though 251 is a standard, there is a lot of interpretation of that as far as what labs send, how they send it, how states want to receive it for their own purposes. Here within New York, our HL7 parser is very flexible to the various HL7 that comes in. But I do know that there are from conversations and from working with other states that some states want specific fields or the formatting to be done in a specific way for them. And it kind of, I've heard from labs on the national calls that, you know, it causes some issues as far as, hey, we got to do this for New York. We got to do this for Tennessee. We got to do this for Washington, and issues within standardization. So I'm being vague with how I'm talking about it. So, you know, if there's specific questions afterwards, feel free to ask. I'll try and get into it with my next slide as well. The flat files, especially over the past year or two with COVID, has thrown everybody off because every state has their own CSV file that they've created, as well as the national flat file that was created a year or so ago. So alongside of that, there's the standardization of coding schemes. Most facilities that are using HL7 use Lincoln SNOMED, also use local codes. There are some out there that haven't caught on to the LOINC code yet, and typically, if I'm only talking from the New York State perspective, send us just local codes because they're smaller sites and their lab systems can't handle the intake of LOINC codes and or SNOMED for that matter. And even with that, the sites that do use LOINC codes, there are so many codes out there these days between ones that have been deprecated over the years and new ones that have come out because of new testing that it is very, very hard for labs and states to keep up with them all. I know that we have FinVADS, which is a great tool. These days, I'm not sure how often FinVADS is truly updated to meet all these codes. But having better standardization among those codes that the labs are told to follow to send would be a big help in getting things taken care of as far as how states operate. Lab systems, EMR vendor changes for the state health departments have been an ongoing issue. Mostly from the hospital labs, not necessarily the large commercial labs, but, you know, the hospital labs every couple of years tend to change their lab systems, going from Soft or Meditech to Cerner or Sunquest or Epic, and among all the other things that are going on with the world with COVID and everything, here at the States, we have to deal with these transitions. And that kind of goes in with the standardization. I'm not really sure anymore. I know a lot of these EMR and lab vendors 5 years ago had to go through the whole meaningful use process. I'm not sure where that whole process stands as far as meeting the standards that they had to go through to make sure that their systems are meaningful use capable. Sometimes cooperation with those lab vendors as far as requests that the states have, one-offs and the like, get met with some resistance because they're trying to create one interface that meets everybody's goals. And as we all know, that's not something that really happens. And my fourth issue that we have on the inbound is completeness of information being reported, primarily all patient demographics, which everybody complains about and has complained about for years. There is issues as our health code has expanded in New York State and our partners down in New York City as far as wanting provider NPI, facility NPI to be sent. A lot of times that's incomplete because ordering facilities can have multiple NPIs and it's hard for labs to know which NPI to send or even maintain them within their systems to send them. So that over the years has become a new hurdle for us as far as completeness. We here at New York have compliance reports that we send out to labs, not only for infectious diseases, the standards, but also for HIV and lead and cancer pathology reporting, all broken down by programs, and each program sends their own compliance reports out. So within some of our programs, they ask for corrective action plans from the labs as far as how they're going to try and rectify the either incomplete data or invalid data that is sent over. That's one of the ways that we're trying to work with and get as much complete data as we can with this. So in brief, I know I only had a few minutes for this. That's the basic issues that we're facing. If you want to go to the next slide. Possible solutions for some of these issues. A lot of this, from my point of view, and this has been my point of view for many, many years, is we need to get some acceptance or some, trying to think of the right word here, delegation of standards and what needs to be done more from the national CDC level. We have an HL7 standard that was issued and balloted. And as I mentioned, it changes, it morphs for each state. I can speak to this as states are working with interstate reporting through the AIMS platform. We've discovered that each state wants something different in how we, New York State, sends to them. So if there were something to say, here's the standard, you have to, you need to abide by the standard. And, if it says that a value type for an OBX segment can be any one of these five value types, you should be able to take and absorb any one of those five value types. It helps both the states, it helps both the labs as far as how to
Properly. Sorry to interrupt. I'm going to just do a time check because we've got a couple more panelists. Yep. I think we can absorb the information on this slide. Thank you so much. And we're going to just hold on because we're going to go to a panel discussion at the end. So if we can go on to our next panel, which is Ricky and Justin. Really, Ricky representing both the national perspective for public health labs, as well as the important work that APHL does with the AIMS platform. And then Justin representing the work on the ground as operating a public health lab. So Ricky, over to you.
Thank you, Arian. Next slide. So I just wanted to briefly mention the current state, and I'm not really going to talk too much. I have a lot of words on the slide, so people can read this later. But as David pointed out, there is a national profile. Each state has variations, as he points out. And there is NIST tooling for certification, which I highly encourage people to use. There are test cases that people need to go through that try to look at the different possibilities of how labs could send certain data for certain conditions. But older versions of ELR are probably are definitely still in use, as David mentioned. And the currently most implemented standard is the ELRR1 standard, though some public health agencies may have updated to later versions or the public health component in LRI, which is the latest version and a new version that includes covering the HHS component for COVID reporting is going to be published here any minute. So it's evolving. The one problem that, you know, the labs are having, and David pointed out, there is not enough demographic information in some of the lab results, and Epi uses that to assess health disparities, among other things, as well as matching, patient matching, so that, but the labs don't necessarily get that information. So I think there's a little bit of a data flow problem going on here. Next slide. So what are the gaps? The certifications apply only to EHR systems. So LIS systems that are standalone, that are not modules and EHRs, don't need to be certified. And the public health systems on the other side, on the receiver end, also don't need to be certified at the moment. So it's that's a problem. The RCMTs, which I think you mentioned, FinVets publishes those, has a list of all the codes associated with reportable conditions, but they don't consider the combination of the LOINC for the test and the SNOMED for the results to trigger. And it doesn't include any state-specific rules. So there is RCKMS, Reportable Conditions Knowledge Management System, that has trigger codes and allow jurisdictions to author their specific rules, but the current focus there is ECR. You know, we could hopefully expand or have the jurisdictions utilize their capabilities clarifying the reporting roles in RCKMS for the lab specifically. And then what would be my recommendations? Expanding certifications to LIMS systems and public health surveillance systems. And at the moment, we're only certifying the systems, but really I think what we need to certify is the actual implementation at each site of a certified system. We should consider updating to the latest version, the public health component in LRI, because we have, you know, as the standards evolve, we've incorporated better features. For example, including the test device identifier, so that you can actually really know which specific test was done, because LOINC, from a method perspective, looks at it as a broader picture. And in some cases that may make a difference for the result interpretation. And then, you know, support expansion of use of ECR for the data used to assess health disparities, because those kind of demographic data usually reside in the EHR and the lab doesn't really need them for result processing. Next slide. Do I have another one? I just pulled together some more workflow related items. So it'd be nice to have both systems on either end of the exchange adhere to the standard and be able to use the proper value sets. David mentioned it's hard to keep up with the LOINC codes that are applicable to each of the tests. And I wanted to mention for SARS-CoV-2, CDC publishes the LIVID file, which provides you the LOINC code for at the test level for each of the specific tests, as well as the related SNOMED codes for the specimen type and the result values if they're codified. And SHIELD is hoping to create a resource like that, a laboratory interoperability data repository that people could access to help them make that the LOINC and SNOMED codification a little easier. It'd be nice to have a master patient index so that patient matching would be easier. And the rest is words on the slide. People can read later. So I have another slide, or is up over to Justin? Okay. So the other question was what recommended data flows align with the criteria, and the ELR for results, which is, as David pointed out, is usually the first indication to public health that there is something going on. It's timely and unadulterated, but demographic and social determinants of health, I think, should flow through ECR and additional clinical information about comorbidities and other things that might help the EPIs and researchers find correlations between things also should flow through EHR, from the EHR. So you mentioned AIMS real briefly. One of the things AIMS does is help folks that have to connect to more than one health department to only have one connection, and AIMS provides the routing, kind of like a post office. And I think I'll turn it over to Justin with that.
Yeah, thank you, Justin.
Okay, next slide, I guess. Okay, so hi everybody, Justin Nucci, Data Systems Manager for the Colorado Department of Public Health State Laboratory. Just quick background, I mean, we support HL7251 reporting for to our EOR team, as well as directly to CDC for things like FLIP and ARLN and LRNB. And we also support HL7 messaging to our local health information exchanges. And then in the cases we do have direct integrations, we support that going back to hospitals. So I guess first thing is we support a lot of different flavors of HL7, which can be a difficulty in itself, but kind of moving on from there. You know, one of the biggest challenges that we have, particularly between us and our ELR reporting team, is the fact that, you know, we are not the primary provider of data, you know, coming from demographic data coming around patients. We often, we still get a lot of sample submissions on paper, although we are working, you know, to moving towards web portal and direct integrations when possible. However, you know, a lot of times we will get, you know, just patient name and date of birth, which really limits the ability for, as I think the consistent theme here is, to be able to do patient matching and follow up, particularly if there's no other report going directly to the ELR team for that person. And, you know, the other piece to this, I think, that is more of a challenge for the ELR team than for us, is that, you know, we are not, when we send the messages, the HL7 messages to our ELR team, you know, we're not the original sender. So we usually identify that, but it's not identified in the same fields as it would be if it was directly coming from the hospital or the provider. So I think that information is often not very complete as well. And once again, we can only provide what has been provided to us. And that's limited in most cases. The other thing that comes down, I think, is another consistent theme that we're hearing, is that, you know, we support not only your standard reportable disease diagnostic information, but as well as some of the more advanced, you know, public health surveillance things like COVID whole genome sequencing, which I think the list of SNOMED codes is now like over 1,000. Salmonella serotyping and, you know, enteric disease, WGS for things like PulseNet ID, which is just really non-standard information. So, you know, we do use a lot of local coding and kind of non-standard fields, I think, when reporting some of this information to our ELR team. And that is something that we're constantly, you know, having to work directly with them to kind of come up with, for lack of a better term, a workaround to support some of this information, particularly around the PulseNet info. So, you know, enteric disease sequence typing. So yeah, I mean, so there's a lot of challenges, but, you know, I think the best thing we can do is continue to support electronic ordering at the state laboratory, which gives us some more control around collecting those demographic fields and supporting our ELR team on the downstream side to make sure we have complete information.
Thank you so much. That's fantastic. This completes our super high level and rapid run through the public health lab side of this. And then now we're going to go to the the commercial and community lab view, really looking at the national commercial lab just as a representative proxy for all labs. So if we go on to the next section, so Carmen and Prashant are going to talk about LabCorp's perspective on the last 3 years. As a national lab, they've got a unique perspective on being exposed to all of the variation state by state, as well as being intermediaries in a complex flow. So Carmen and Prashant, over to you.
Quick introduction. My name is Carmen Pugh. I am responsible for LabCorp's corporate state reporting program. LabCorp is unique in that we have a centralized mainframe where the majority of our laboratories actually feed into the one main LIS, and that allows us to have one corporate state reporting office and one the ability to create one file for each state instead of multiple files or reports from each individual state. I have been with LabCorp for state reporting for about the past 16 years. So I've actually seen our program grow from the very beginning with very few states receiving electronic reports, mostly paper, to basically every state getting an electronic file. Prashant, do you want to introduce yourself? And then I can go ahead and go through the bullet points.
Great. So my name is Prashant Gupta, Vice President, Architecture and Informatics, responsible for all of our data and analytics platforms. Here to support Carmen.
I will also clarify that I am a med tech, a clinical laboratory scientist. I am not IT, so Prashant is here to certainly help me fill in any gaps of my knowledge. And I do apologize that we do not have any slides. Just quickly kind of go through the bullet points that we were given to address and talk about on this call. A clear view of our current state reporting for LabCorp. We currently have about 14 different programs or processes in place that allow us to accommodate all of the different state reporting requirements for all the different states. We have approximately 8 programs that will create HL7 files. And this goes across for infectious diseases, COVID, HPVs, cancers, HIV genotypes. We have 4 programs that have the capability of creating fax files for the states that still want faxes. We have a program that creates a non-HL7 piped limited file, primarily for blood leads, because a lot of states cannot take their blood leads in HL7 format. And we still have a program that creates paper reports that get printed, and we have to step into an envelope and mail a couple of times a week. We can report anywhere between 200 to 400 HL7 ELR files on a daily basis. That just depends on what program is running at what particular time. We report to every state. We report separately to some cities and counties, and we report to most US territories. Our HL7 format is 231. I acknowledge we are behind. There are some states that do require duplicate reporting. So a couple of states will require that we report, for example, STDs in a fax, but also included in our HL7 file. We even have one state that requires that we report HL7, non-HL7, an electronic file and non-HL7, and also fax for one particular disease. So can everybody hear me okay? Okay, there was a beep, sorry. We do include Loinc and SNOMED in our reports. We work very hard to make sure that every state reportable disease test and result is assigned to Loinc and or SNOMED before we go live with that test. We have different ways of transmitting our files. We use FIDMS, SFTP, the SOAP transmitter, and then some states actually have their own tools that we have to house internally within our firewall to allow us to transmit our ELR files to them. And lastly, we have been reporting to the CDC through the BioSense or National Syndromic Surveillance Program, de-identified reports on all potential state reportable tests. And we've been doing that, I would say, since the mid-2000s. All of that just to reemphasize that is de-identified patient information. Some of the gaps that we're seeing with the implementation of ELR is primarily LabCorp, most of the lab work that we get, we're not seeing the patient. What we're getting are blood collections or specimen collections from a medical facility, a hospital, a medical provider. They're collecting that information. They're the ones face-to-face with the patient. So they're collecting that information and they're placing the order and sending it to LabCorp. So we're not face-to-face with the patient. And yet there's this push now for laboratories to collect a lot of information that can only be obtained from that patient. What is the patient's race? What language do they speak? What's their sexual orientation or their gender identity? We don't have that information as a laboratory. We're not, for the most part, face-to-face with that patient. I think one of the issues is that there's just a lack of regulatory standards for a state that says a lab has to report this, but there's no regulatory standard that says that healthcare provider, that medical facility has to collect that information and put it in the lab order. There's just the lab has to collect it. And basically what we're being told is if you don't get it, you shouldn't do the test. And that's not in the best interest of the patient or public health for us to refuse to do that test. Another gap or another issue that we encounter as a national lab with the reporting is that all the different reportable diseases and tests can differ from state to state. I pulled different regulations for three diseases, chlamydia, Lyme, and tuberculosis. Chlamydia ranged across 6 or 7 different states, reporting times of 1 day, 48 hours, 5 days, 7 working days, and 1 week. Lyme was pretty much the same. And then for TB, some of the requirements were immediately, 1 working day, 7 days, or only phone the next business day. There's not even an option for an ELR reporting for that particular state. Because of the tests and the results that differ from state to state, it's a lot more difficult for national laboratories to keep up with what each laboratory, what each state needs. We have certain states that are now starting to require all results. A couple of states say, we don't care if it's negative, we want every hepatitis, we want every HIV. And this just increases the burden because for 5 states, you're reporting all hepatitis, but for other states, you're having to report just the positives. And what they want in terms of the tests to be reported, they might say hepatitis B, but some states will list which hepatitis B test they want. And other states just say acute or chronic or both with no guidance. And we're left with working those specifics out with that particular state health department to determine what exactly do you mean by acute? Because what you mean by acute differs from what another state means by acute hepatitis. Some of the recommendations that we have for advancing the criteria or standards, just like the previous 2 or 3 presenters said, there has to be 1 HL7 implementation guide. There can't be state flavors or state variations. One of the main reasons why LabCorp has not yet been able to come up with a 251 or a newer version of HL7 is we don't have the capability of meeting every single state's individual requirements. What will work for one state won't work for another. And it's just not feasible to create 50 or 60 different HL7 versions. Everybody right now takes our 231. So we're staying with 231 for now. We will work on it, but that's one of the reasons why we haven't advanced at this point. I do think that there needs to be one standardized set of patient demographics and no variations from state to state. You've got 25 of the states that want race and ethnicity. You've got, 50% of the states that just want race. You've got some that want pregnancy status. There just needs to be across the board. This is the basic amount of patient demographic information that a laboratory needs. And I think that it needs to be dropped, the requirement for labs to collect and store patient demographics that we don't need. We don't need pregnancy status. We really don't need race, we don't need ethnicity, except for a handful of tests that actually require that for the testing algorithm and the calculation of the results. Most of that information isn't needed. We don't even need address, but we recognize that patient address is needed for public health reporting. And I think that's something that a lot of laboratories should work to achieve. I think that we need to have standardization across all states. and there needs to be some standardization amongst the vendors and the EMRs. Primarily, if you look at a lot of the problems with public health reporting, especially with laboratories, you have to kind of do a root cause analysis. The first improvement has to begin with the very first encounter, that patient encounter, when you've got a healthcare provider who's sitting face to face with their patient. That is the root cause analysis. That is the primary time when all of the information that is needed is available. So that healthcare provider can collect all of that demographic information. They need to be able to store it into their system, their medical, their EMR, vendor systems, whatever. And that means that all of the vendors and all of the EMRs have to have a minimum standard of data that they have to be able to store. Currently, you can have a medical facility that uses an EMR system and it doesn't store patient address. That's an extra fee. That's an extra package that medical facility has to pay for. Oh, you want to have the patient's address stored. That's going to cost you another $25,000 to be able to do that so that you can send the address to the laboratory. So there has to be some type of minimum standard of data across the board for vendors and EMRs that they have to have this base set of information, and they have to be able to transfer that information to other medical facilities, to other laboratories. And I think the last point I wanted to make is that case reporting, it has to be beefed up, it has to be improved, because those healthcare providers are the ones that are face to face with those patients. They're the ones that have the very first idea that we've got a potential reportable disease. They should have to do their reporting daily. There needs to be an electronic way for them to do it. And they should be doing it for suspected and confirmed reportable diseases so that the first notification actually comes from the person who says, I think you have COVID. I think you might have chlamydia. I need to go in and report you as a suspect case so that when the laboratory reports a positive result, that information can be married up in the public health department system, and everybody's got all the information they need for surveillance. And that's all I had. Prashant, did you have anything you want to add?
I just wanted to do a time check. Prashant, if you've got something quick, otherwise I want to get to panel discussion. Prashant?
Oh, sorry. I said, yeah, let's move on. I think this is
okay. Great. Perfect. Thank you so much. So super, super helpful. I do want to point out, I dropped in the chat and we'll include it in our spreadsheet, but Stephen Lane and I put together as part of our ISP task force with many of the task force members that are part of this task force, put together a ridiculously deep dive report on orders and labs, encompassing LOI, LIVID, LRI, made some of the recommendations that we're dropping in the chat in terms of as we get to broader penetration of ECR, relying on ECR more for the clinical context, and then thinking about an ecosystem-based approach for certification to make sure that we pick up all of the actors in the chain. So I would just encourage task force members who weren't part of that that previous task force to go back and look at that deep dive and look at some of the recommendations that we put there. So with that, I'm going to go to discussion. Ask folks to use the raise hand feature and ask questions of our panelists. I'm going to take coordinator's privilege and ask both LabCorp and probably Ricky. So Carmen and Ricky, Carmen, Prashant, and Ricky, if you can give us a view on what are the state-by-state variations that are not accommodated in the LRI flavor of the ELR spec. So let's assume we move to the latest LRI spec. Heard the public health genomic sequencing issues loud and clear. Outside of that, where are there state variations that are not currently accommodated in the latest LRI spec?
That's a good question. I think, I mean, the reason, you know, we've been evolving LRI, the public health component of LRI, is to accommodate variations that come up over time when we learn of it, we being HL7 in this case. Mm-hmm. And so one thing I could think about was for COVID, the requirement to report, you know, the school information. That's not, I mean, that's sort of doable with an NK1 segment in ELR, R1 as well as LRI right now. But that was one state variation that I can come up with at the top of my head, whereas like demographic information more than lab related information. I think the lab related information we've pretty much covered with the latest LRI.
Got it. Super useful. Perfect. So if only we moved to the latest LRI spec on a nationwide basis, and if only we were getting complete order information inclusive of standard demographic elements and minimum patient contact information, we would be accounting for almost all of the state-based variation.
From a standards perspective of being able to communicate them between systems, yes. I think, you know, the other big problem that Carmen was mentioning is making sure that everybody knows of the variations and those are easily accessible.
Got it.
So that's the other aspect, I think.
Perfect. Bryant has his hand up. Bryant, go ahead.
And unless you wanted to get, you asked the question to two.
Oh yeah. So Carmen or Prashant, any additions to Ricky's comments?
I would say that, you know, we continually receive, and I don't want to name states or point any particular entity out, but, you know, we do receive requests to place certain data elements in HL7 fields that aren't designated for that use. So we'll have a state, you know, just for us, can you put this value in OBR 13 or something like that? And from a national perspective, it makes it difficult for us because what we do for one state ends up applying to every state.
Yep.
So now we have to find a way to either remove it from every other state or just tell every other state, ignore the information in this field. But I would say there's probably three or four different states that have, you know, sent me their flavor of the newest HL7 implementation guide. And they're like, you know, as soon as you can do this, send it, you know, send us a test file and work with you. And then we go through it and we can discover where it differs.
Got it.
From the national.
Got it. So in all those cases, that data is available in the LRI spec. It's just that states are requesting variation off the spec for data that is available in the spec.
Or they want information that only that state has put into like a demographic piece of information, yeah, that may not have a spot in HL7. So they're finding a spot that they would like to receive it in.
Got it. So that sort of, we have a little background chat comment on where ECR should be the origination of record versus ELR. Okay, Bryant, back over to you.
Mute button was stuck. Carmen, I apologize and feel free to turf this to Mr. Gupta. I'm really struck, and I'm trying to get curious here. I'm not understanding the stance that you can't go to 251 because some states are asking for a complete implementation of of the LRI, and some states only want a partial implementation. It seems like you should do a full implementation of 251, and then the states that don't want those demographic fields can ignore them.
Right, I agree, and I'm sorry if I said that we couldn't. Let me backpedal a little bit and let me say that we have been working every year to start the conversion over to a 251. And for the last 3 years, we've had pandemics thrown our way and we have had to put that off. And I did not feel that the last couple of years was a time for me to start going to a state that is taking our 231 file, has no issues with our 231 file, and saying, here, test this. Because what I'm hearing from a vast majority of states is they're being bombarded with local hospitals and smaller laboratories that aren't even getting ELR reporting, and they're trying to onboard them. So why should I take up their time? And then when we're starting to do the 251, looking at, you know, the changes that we need to create that format, we see that we follow the national guide, and then we find that, you know, another state wants a piece of different information here. So ultimately, what we're going to do is proceed with the national guide. And then we will have to work state by state and say, here's our file. Take it or leave it. If you cannot accept our newest format, then we will keep you on a 231. That's what we're going to have to do. So we will follow the national standard. We will not follow the state flavors.
But the state, I just want to make sure that you're, the characterization of state flavors, there are optional elements within that implementation guide. Those are not optional for you to determine which you implement and not. Those flavor choices are for states to determine. So I just want to make sure that you don't, when you make the choice for that superset, you're being inclusive of what states require by law in most cases.
So why don't we, thanks, Brian.
So I'm happy to, I hope you have a multi-state working group for that process. Looking forward to working with you.
Yep. Perfect. Okay. Erin, let's go over to you.
Yeah. Hi. And thank you for this opportunity. I'll just say that, you know, a few other things that we tend to see specifically in ELR, and I think we'll see variation both on public health, but also we'll see it on both sender and receiver side of the interface, is in regards to the implementation of parent-child relationships. That I think causes quite a bit of problem and work and special effort, if you will, with the consumption and interpretation of that information. That's pretty huge, particularly in the lab results that we're dealing with in public health. The other thing that I would mention is the completeness of, or the usage, adoption and usage of SNOMED CT, whether it's for the coded result, but also for the specimen details. That's also a pretty big challenge. And then you might see public health agencies that are very kind of draconian. We have to have LOINC, we have to have SNOMED. If we don't, we're not going to onboard you. We get pushback on that. Or you might have public health jurisdictions that say, okay, we really want LOINC and SNOMED, but you don't already have it coded. So we're going to take your local flavors and we'll do the mapping. And that's where I think at least a slim part of variation might also come into play, where public health jurisdictions who might be in the situation where they're, you know, beggars can't be choosers, are going to try to take whatever they can get, try to create documentation based on that variation. And now we start to see the proliferation of that variation.
Thank you for that, Hans. Let's go over to you.
Let me unmute. Sorry, I was responding to a chat there. I'm not going to repeat some of the comments made in the chat. I really appreciated the discussion and the updates, the perspectives. They echo a lot of the discussions that have happened, as Erin also indicated in the IPS, in the prior public health standard. And at the core of it, it seems to be that we have an align and optimize between streams, data streams issue. We have completeness as well, quality as well. I'm not debating that. That's an ongoing thing. But part of it is this aligning and balancing when to use what what flows. And particularly as we have seen over the last couple of years, 2 years during the pandemic, that as an emergency comes about, new data requirements come up fast and furious, differently in different areas, different parts. Having a resilient approach that can easily add that to a flow, that extra data is critical, because we don't know what it is going to be tomorrow. One could say, well, we can always query for the extra part. Well, where would we query? We go back to the trusted source as the primary place to get that data. That means is that we want to rely on the trusted source to get the best context to public health, and not flow that through 2-3 different steps through a part that in itself does not have the need for it. So I think there's this alignment and optimization that's really critical. And I'm purposely using the name of one of the Helios tracks there as align and optimize, that we need to look at that. And I think that's really coming through the feedback, the update that the panel is providing, that is critical. And then the related question is, it always comes back there as well, as patient matching. How do we do that? We don't have a unique identifier, so we need to have a reasonable minimum set. Agreed, completely agreed that the transactions must have that, so that when it comes back together again in public health, it can be pulled together with an agreed to data set at agreed to level of confidence that it is the right patient in the absence of a unique identifier. And one of the comments in the discussion debate going back and forth a little bit is that how can we use other methods for that as well? So I think we strongly want to look at the opportunities of the variety of networks, particularly at the national level, to pull it together. What can we take advantage of that's happening there to arrive at that singular or at least linked set of patient records that public health can take advantage of as well? Where appropriate and authorized to do that. And that means is that the networks have an important responsibility to ensure is that they are able to understand, not just for public health, but for treatment, that's critical as well, a core element of it, where's the patient's data? And how do we do that in the best way so that we have a comprehensive understanding where they are, and then we can take advantage of that. So I think part of the discussion needs to not only be on the individual standard that at hand, lab reporting, but how does it fit with the other data flows? Where is the data best done? And from a patient matching perspective, how can we take advantage of efforts already in place that in itself also require a good linking of records, i.e. the national networking efforts, TEF in particular right now, a lot of attention. How can we take advantage of that to fulfill that promise of comprehensive location of patient records?
Yep, but again, just to editorialize, you can't use that facility if you don't have at least the demographic basics that come in on the order, and if the order only contains, you know, an accession number and an opaque identifier, an opaque local identifier, and you know maybe a first name and last name. You can't use any of that facility. So all of that rests on at least getting the basic minimum demographic information in the order to the lab. I would really encourage task force members who weren't part of that task force to read the report that we wrote on lab, because I'm obviously biased because Stephen and I and the task force members spent a lot of work at putting those recommendations together. But it does occur to me that if we just did all those things, we'd be in a much, much better position. Hung, let's get you in the conversation.
Oh, I just want to echo what you said, but also I do think that we need to also concentrate on the infrastructure, because you know you can have the best standard in the world, but if the hardware or the software to carry out the messages does not include the functionality to support those data elements, then you're stuck. And so the fact that there are some laboratories out there having to foot the bill to add additional functionality to a LIS system or EHR that they've already purchased in order to accommodate demographic information, I think is a travesty. It shouldn't be an unfunded mandate like that. If it's something that's important enough that it's required for mandated for public health reporting, it needs to be accommodated for without additional expense. And so, you know, I fully support the work of developing the appropriate standards, but I think we also should press that the existing infrastructure needs to be fixed and the functionality needs to be elevated to accommodate what it is that we want to achieve.
Yeah, maybe just a little bit of context for everybody who's not aware of the super detailed weeds that we're wading through here. Generally, certified systems need to have transparency of purchase. FTC has, I think, famously put out some high-profile lawsuits relating to false claims, relating to the False Claims Act, to divergences between what people think they purchased and the need to purchase additional capabilities for certified requirements. The problem here is that we took out the LRI, we took out the meaningful use incentive for lab results, electronic lab results, out of a belief that it was topped out. That is, most provider organizations could receive electronic results through non-standard means. And then we had a policy of taking out the certification criteria associated with topped out requirements because EHR vendors didn't want to go through the issues of certifying to things that weren't required by the programmatics on the CMS side. And so there are no certification criteria for lab results attached to the existing EHR program. We've never had certification criteria attached to the orders. And then we don't have certification criteria that apply to LIS vendors. Because we don't have either an incentive program or a requirements program under CLIA or other for the lab side of the equation. And so weirdly, it is actually it is completely permissible for people to nickel and dime organizations for interfaces in this space. Because it is not, in fact, a certified requirement of a certified program, whether it's right or not, it doesn't violate. I'm not a lawyer, but where the FTC has gotten involved in False Claims Act, it's been related to purchases of a certified technology, and then the need to purchase additional capabilities on top of that, where the technology was warranted as being certified. So it all goes back to we took out a lot of these requirements from the certification program.
I think that's a nice segue into the tracking sheet, actually.
Yeah. I realize I'm monologuing an area that I'm passionate about, and Julian, I think it's right to turn it back over to you to go through the tracking sheet.
Can we please pull up the tracking sheet? So I did notice that quite a few people had an opportunity to provide some comments, and we'll start with, I think, the sessions that we've already had around immunizations and then look at ECR and go from there. So if we could start with immunizations, please. I just want to add that CSD is not, through CSD, have not had an opportunity to be providing comments yet. It needs to go through a process, obviously, but be assured, we will be actively engaged in providing our own commentary here. Can you make that a little bit bigger, please? So we only have about 10, 12 minutes here for discussions. And I know, Arian, you ran through some of the some of the comments earlier. Thank you so much. On our last call, but we do seem to be getting some agreements that are coming through within the text here. Beginning first one around the key importance of supporting standards and certifying systems to help public health authorities to achieve ourselves more efficiently. We should have ONC coordinate more with public health and system developers and organizations to define and certify standards for vital statistics. So including that in with the with immunization registries for situational awareness, I think that would be helpful. I know certain states already have actually begun doing efforts to populate those registries from vitals. And so they've already been making those connections there. And so that work has already started, and making sure that we put some recommendations in place, I think would be a good place to start for broader adoption and a more standardized message. Certification criteria for reporting and query retrieving inclusives of transport, we seem to be getting some agreement there as well. Is that Abby Sears? I just want to make sure. Please, if people could also just use their full names to make sure that we're getting everybody correctly. Anybody else want to say anything around that particular recommendation?
Hey, Jillian, just I want to let the panel, the invited panel know that they're welcome to stay for this section.
Oh, but sorry.
We finished grilling them. So if they want to go do other things with their lives, they are free to go. But just really thank the panel. Thank the panel for their time. It was fantastic, informative. Obviously spurred a ton of conversation. So thank you all.
And a big thank you from me too, especially for LabCorp, who came on it at late notice. So much obliged. If people want to raise their hands if they have any additional commentary or things, please do so. And I'm trying to keep my eyes open for that. Okay, moving on to the next recommendation, also from Arian. Looking to create a more expansive race and ethnicity coding system, I think is huge. I have heard that CDC is convening a group to do so. So that, you know, that looks like that effort is moving forward, and hopefully we can take advantage of that and perhaps make a recommendation to look to that standard for implementation. My screen just keeps moving there.
Jillian, can I don't please. Know if you want this to be a discussion.
Yes, please.
On the last point, I think this is kind of a process question, maybe to Owen's, what is the scope of the recommendations that we can make here? If there's a vocabulary standard that's not yet published by CDC, can we make a recommendation towards an anticipated release? Sure. Or do we just simply need to encourage that process keep proceeding and review it once it's published?
I think we can do both. I think it's within the charge to both look at existing criteria and seeing if that were opportunities to tighten them, as well as to recommend that new ones be established.
Yeah, and if we know of the existence of a larger than OMB but smaller than full CDC FinVADS race ethnicity subset, we certainly could encourage that ONC coordinate with CDC to publish and certify to that standard.
And then the timeline of that, the certification process versus, you know, standards, interoperability advisory, or, you know, voluntary adoption of those advanced, more inclusive processes. Do we need to wait for the full rulemaking process type for them to go drop into certification? Because, you know, we can't wait that long to get some of these things in to respond to the disparities we're seeing in this
pandemic. Yeah. So Brian, in our last work group, we were in the middle of a particular process. In that case, the ISA publication process. And so there were specific rules that we were operating against the ISA process. Here we have a little more free rein to make recommendations. It's going to be to ONC to figure out how to get those recommendations through the existing processes.
I just don't want to recommend the impossible.
Yeah.
Okay. Very specific on line four here, very specific recommendation that we use the HIMSS IIP test method for use for certification and deprecate the current one.
Hans, I think that's the same recommendation, or somebody else made the same recommendation. I point that out a couple places where there's some duplication, but Hans, from an EHRA perspective, is that consistent with where most EHRs are certifying? Is that consistent with the test method that most EHRs are actually certifying to?
It is a mix. So it is a perfectly appropriate comment and recommendation to make that it is valid. It's actually already valid. Some organizations do it, not everybody. Others go directly to the ONC test capability. Right. So it's an alternative. If we believe that they are testing for more, then we may want to look at that. I can bring it back and see whether there's any particular comments on that. It has not come up in the EHRA discussion as needing to be commented on yet. So I'll
bring it back. Got it. I mean, the perspective here is that ERA is working with HIMSS on this test method. And most of the energy and effort is going there. They've got a certification. They've got a partnership with Drummond for doing certification against that test method. Feels like most of the energy is going to that test method. It feels inefficient to have a second test method that then needs to keep up with all of the updates to the HIMSS IIP test method.
Moving further down. Recommending that both sides of the exchange same standard and also include transport. And that another recommendation that HL7 implementation guide be tightened to reduce ambiguity and align on a common interpretation. I think we're seeing a call for that in many areas.
Yeah. Is that different from, can we align that with rows 1 through 4 above?
If we're talking about row 9, number 7, yes.
Row 8.
Row 7. Row 7 and row 8. I think it's my 3 that calls for certification to the transport method. And then maybe it's 2 that calls for certification for transport and calls for reduction of variability and alignment. So if we can just consolidate down to,
they can consolidate. We wrote them all at the same time.
That's right.
That makes a lot of sense. I think on the number 7 is that finding a way, and it's one approach that's being suggested in 7 on where there are deviations, customizations, variations. How can we work that through a common channel so that you get that superset subset approach, where there's recognition of if you do it, this is the way to do it, and this is the full set that's available to you, and there's consistency there.
Yep, Hans, why don't you and I just take some offline work via email just to see where we can consolidate. Perfect. Yep.
So I'm hearing for a common agreement for a constraint of the standard there, I think, in summary.
On this one, I think that anything on pace matching, we probably want to combine into a general a theme recommendation and then have subsets under there. I think based on some of the discussion in the chat that came up today, we may want to consider including and expanding on improving patient matching, the demographic data sets that needs to be agreed to, the components of that. Here it talks about the some of the awareness and how matching characteristics are being used, transparency, confidence levels that are appropriate to be reached according to that. And perhaps we can also bring in some of that, what's the role of networks, national, state, otherwise, to help enhance on really putting the links together and take advantage of what they've already been doing or are about to do.
Brian, I see your hands up.
Yeah, I'm Hans. I think this is really important and has been really highlighted by the pandemic and the small number, albeit, of people who made a state transition during the pandemic and received one dose in a sequence from one state, and it's stored in one state immunization registry, and the second dose in another, or folks that live on state borders like Vancouver and Portland, and may have, you know, inadvertently crossed state lines. But I think that, do we want to make reference to the acronym just flew out of my head, the multi-state immunization hub? No, what is it called?
IIS?
The IIS multi-state IZ hub.
Gateway,
thank you. The IZ Gateway, specifically, and that it needs more investment or incentives for states to get fully onboarded. And then I'm just second point, and this goes back to the recommending the impossible. Do we recommend a national patient identifier, which I know is legally not possible at this moment, but maybe the federal government can request some changes in legislation.
That would be quite a conversation, I think.
I'm going to say we can ask for it, but you know, we shouldn't hold our breath.
I would agree is that I think we need to, while we can indicate that would be very helpful, even if it's agreed to today, that will be 5-10 years by the time that it's probably rolled out with what needs to happen to make that work. So what do we do in the meantime? And I think some of these other things, demographic data, network alignment, et cetera, would tremendously help. It's not going to be perfect, but it would help tremendously.
I agree, Hans. I think that both can be pursued in parallel. I mean, like, you know, from someone who spent a lot of time doing deduplication during the pandemic and trying to keep up, you know, just getting completeness of demographic information goes a long way to meet automated thresholds and just go directly into the surveillance system without manual review. So, you know, there are definitely opportunities for improvement to reduce manual processes.
Hans, we should probably recommend that each of the appropriate implementation guides be updated to include the USA, Project USA guidance. I love that recommendation. Maybe we pull that one out and make it an overarching one as well.
Yep. Yeah, that one. And then I'm not sure whether it's best that I create another line for talking about how patient matching and the national networks and state networks, et cetera, how they can build on each other.
Yeah.
Can you send a link out to that, please? So that.
Yeah. Oh, to US Project USA. Yeah, I'll drop that in the chat. Hans, I was intending to add a sort of a recommendation, an overarching recommendation that public health data systems be certified to query TEFCA networks, and that would be an appropriate place to drop that comment in.
Okay.
I see that we're at 11:50, and Lauren, do we have a little bit more time to keep going, or do we need
usually to give ourselves 5 minutes at the end for public comment?
Just five, so we have an additional 5 minutes?
Yeah, maybe just go another couple of minutes. Okay. And if we don't have public comment, we can always come back and fill the rest of the time.
Okay, thanks, Liz, for rescreening again. Okay, if you could scroll down a little bit more. Again, strengthening alignment with data streams and other public health reporting streams. I think that is inherently very sensible. Okay, sorry, hard for me to review some of these SARs on the fly here. Use of the HL7 CDC implementation guide along with ERA to develop those testing tools. I think that we did hear quite a few calls for additional testing and to maybe tighten up some of the criteria within. Vivian, I don't know if you're on the call still, but maybe you'd like to speak to this.
Yes, I'm here on the call. It was just from our presentation from ERA. It sounds like we've talked about this already, the variation in terms of the implementation of the use of some of these guides. It was pointed out that having these testing tools help cut down on that variation because everybody reads into these guides a little different. So having those tools created in addition to the guides to tighten that up.
Thank you.
And Vivian, can you look at three and maybe one through four and just see if the recommendations there already account for that, or if there's new stuff that we need to add to that just so we can consolidate?
Yes, I think we can consolidate with three. That would be appropriate.
Cool, thank you.
Okay, could you scroll down, please? So that we have a set of several comments, but not so much, you know, recommendations in terms of, I think they could, they're sort of all structured within the context of reducing variability. And I think that one of the other common threads is there's still a little bit of, or not necessarily consensus about what is actually allowable within the implementation guide and what is true variability. And I think we need to flesh that out because I think there's still quite a bit of variation that is allowed within the implementation guide. And maybe that's an area that we could look to tighten up a little bit. Could you please scroll down a little bit more? There was a comment about different standards for vaccine forecasting. I think there are different rules on the ground there, and this is a bit of a challenge in terms of clinical decision support. It's not an area. I don't know, Les, if you want to say something a little bit more specific about what your recommendation would be for this. Maybe he had to drop. Lastly, I'll look at Abby's recommendation here, that recommendation that public health work with CDC specification to ensure that registries do not have that variation. So really importing a single standard for EHR and other HE vendors that would have a single HL7 interface. I think that seems
Yep. Same comment.
Same type of comment.
Can we combine this one?
Abby? Yeah.
So
if I'm counting correctly, I think that we probably could combine many of these comments and recommendations into maybe four or five. So maybe we can do some of that in the interim week. Okay. I do see that we are at 11:55. So. Lauren, do you want to open up the line to see if there's public?
Great. We'll ask thank you to the SL team. Yeah, if you would like to make a public comment and you're on Zoom, please use the hand raise function found at the bottom of your screen. And if you are only on the phone, please press 9 to raise your hand. Then once called upon, press 6 to unmute yourself. We'll give it just a few seconds and then we'll check with the SL team to see if we have any comments on the line.
Yes, we have one hand raised for Noam Arts.
Great, go ahead, Noam.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
We can.
Thanks so much. Good discussion, guys. I have actually a request and not so much as a comment that I did send in via email as well, under the guise of sort of full transparency. It would be great if you could post even just a read-only version of the spreadsheet that you're working on between meetings, so that those of us out here could sort of see a little more closely exactly what you guys are thinking about and have an opportunity to comment on it sort of before it's too late at the end, or before it's too long at the end. I don't know if that's possible. It would be useful. Thanks very much.
I will defer to ONC on the rules around that, but yeah, noted.
I think generally the way this works, Noam, is that as we get towards draft, all of the information that's presented gets attached to the meeting notes, and then we have ample opportunity between as we're finalizing the recommendations, and then they go to the full HITECH. There's an opportunity for comment there as well. And then to the extent that anything comes out of our recommendations as the HITECH to the national coordinator and get placed into rulemaking, there's opportunity there. So we can look at what we can do internally to have the sausage making more transparent, but there's going to be plenty of opportunity to get a view on what the recommendations out of this task force are, and then also to review them prior to their discussion and potential approval by the HITECH. Appreciate the comment.
Thank you. And I don't see any other hands at this time, but just confirming, do we have anyone else either on the phone or have a hand raised?
We don't see any other hands either.
Great. Okay. I will turn it over back to our co-chairs for the last 2 minutes for next steps.
Well, thank you, everybody, for a very robust discussion again today. I think we are identifying some very common themes, as I've said before, and I would like to encourage everybody to continue using the tracking document to indicate concrete recommendations that we may all consider. Arian?
No, absolutely. I think if we just look at our prospective calendar, we're going forward with syndromic surveillance in our next meeting. And then after that, I believe we're going to cancer registries. So, there's one other F criteria.
Survey reporting.
That's right.
Survey. AUAR.
Yeah. Perfect. So if you've got people that you think would be provide appropriate information or testimony on those topics, send them our way, and get your mental engines revving for having those conversations. And then we'll be thick into recommendations writing. We'll continue to send out homework, continue to engage with the spreadsheet, we just encourage folks to continue up the great work that's been going on. This pace will continue fast and furious.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone. Have a great day.
All right.
Bye-bye.